This is Ray Mofield, and we're taping once again for our broadcast, and we're in the series Oral History for Murray State University Polk Library, for the Marshall County Library, and for the State Archives in Frankfort. We're visiting in the apartment today over at Lakeland Wesley Village, a beautiful retirement home on the banks of Jonathan Creek and the embayment of Kentucky Lake, and we're visiting with Mr. D.F. Wigginton. Brother Wigginton is a retired, I believe, Baptist preacher, and I'd met him before, so it's not entirely new to me, because we were over here and taught a course one fall, 1981, I guess it was. It's good to see you again.
Thank you. It's good to have you in my home.
We're trying, of course, to find out what life was like years ago. And if you don't object, we'll ask you when you were born.
September the 16th, 1910.
So that puts you way on up in years. What,
almost 73.
Yeah, almost 73 years old. And where were you born?
Buford in Ohio County, Kentucky. About 15 miles south of Owensboro.
All right, that's very good.
We know that that's, of course, part of West Kentucky, the same as this. Did you go to a one-room school, perchance?
Yes, I did, called Ridge School.
Uh-huh.
2 miles out of Island, Kentucky, in McLean County.
Is that coal mining country up there?
Yes, it is.
Did you ever work in a coal mine?
Just a little. For a dollar a day.
Well, tell us about what school was like when you went.
Well, recess was always the most interesting part of the day. We had...
What games did you play at recess?
We played Ring Around the Roses and Dare Beast, baseball and basketball without a court, and tag and a few things.
Mm-hmm. Now, all those games I remember, except I'm not sure about Dare Base. Could you tell us a little about that? Do you remember?
Well, one person, there were groups at each end of the field. One person would be chosen to go and set his foot over a line in front of the other people and then try to make it back to his own group before he got caught. And so that was the dare.
Mm-hmm.
I dare you to catch me before I get back. If he got caught, he was put in a prison. Each group had a prison off to the side.
And of course, the faster you were, the better you could play.
And the less apt you were to be put in prison.
That was the thrill of it.
So if somebody got in prison, then you were supposed to go and make a dare. And in the process, eliminate the person that was in prison, get him back on the team.
All right, Mr. Wigginton, tell us about your parents. Your mother's name?
Hallie Mae Wood.
And
she grew up around Island, Kentucky.
Did you know your grandparents?
Yes. My granddad Wigginton died when I was quite small. His name was Samuel, and his wife was Margaret, and their home was in Ohio County. I had seven uncles and two aunts on my dad's side.
How many brothers and sisters, any?
I have one brother and three sisters.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know my granddad on my mother's side. He died before I was born, but my grandmother lived for a good many years. Her name was Mary Wood. She came from Wales, and her husband was from England.
Mm-hmm. So they're all British Isles.
Mm-hmm. And my grandmother on my dad's side was Irish and Dutch.
Mm-hmm.
And my granddad on my dad's side was English. So I'm a Duke's mixture.
I guess we all are if we really knew. You grew up in that community, and when did you, say, leave home, so to speak?
I did a lot of running around from the time I was 18. And then I married in 1932.
And who is your wife?
She was Mary McKinney. Mm-hmm. She grew up in Butler County, mm-hmm. one of the poorer counties of Kentucky at that time, but since that time has become to be a much more wealthy county.
Come out of the woods a little, like Marshall County has. Mm-hmm. I know it was rather poor when I was growing up, but it's been very prosperous with the building of the dam and so on since. All right, after you married, what did you first do to make a living?
Well, I was working in the garage when I married, 6 days a week for $5.
Oh.
And then...
But $5 would buy a lot?
Yeah. And then we lived on a farm, and I raised a couple of crops, and...
What did you grow?
Corn, tobacco, mm-hmm. and hay, and vegetables, something to eat. Mm-hmm. And we did raise...
Had horses or mules?
Had team mules. And we raised 2 rows of cotton across the garden. That's quite a ways up north for cotton, but we just tried it. And my wife's mother could card, so...
Made some quilts.
We picked the cotton, picked the seeds out, and my mother-in-law carded the cotton, and they made quilts.
Isn't that great?
That was in 33 and 34. Then, in October of 35, we had 2 sons. We all loaded up with a fellow that was going to Detroit and moved to Detroit. I worked at Chrysler's for 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
Preached my first sermon in Roseville, Michigan in 1940.
Are there any roses there?
Any roses?
In Roseville.
Well, they might be a few flowers.
Your wife was a rose.
Yeah. And then in 1942, we moved to Jackson, Tennessee, and I started to college. Stayed in...
Was that Union University?
Yes, it was. Mm-hmm. And we stayed about 5 years and came back to Graves County in Bell City. And we only stayed there a short time, and then we moved to Catawba. And I was pastor at Hebron and Pleasant Hill in Lyon County.
That's in the WCBL listening area, so
yes.
You have some ears perk up there.
Then I went from there to Olivet on the OK Road at Paducah.
Mm-hmm.
Stayed there 3 years, had a coronary thrombosis, and took about 6 months off and recovered and went to Locust Grove out of Murray. And then from there I went back to Tennessee for another tenure of 5 or 6 years,
mm-hmm.
and then came back to Kentucky, and I've been in western Kentucky most of the time for the last 20 years.
did preaching change very much from your beginning till your retirement?
We were just beginning to get into the big change in the ministry when I retired 9 years ago. Up until then, there were a lot of things that were different to what they are now. Fewer preachers were educated. People were just beginning to learn that the preacher needed a living like everybody else about the time I retired.
More than just a chicken dinner on Sunday and thank you?
That's right. In the almost 40 years after I became a pastor up to now, my highest salary is about what most preachers make in one day now. Now I'm talking about for the week.
Of course, then I suppose, as you said, the preachers were generally speaking not as educated in secular things, but they just preached the Bible, and that's all they thought was necessary. Well, you know, I'm not a Baptist, but I've been reading about a fellow by the name of Criswell. He's a pastor of the Dallas Baptist Church, and he has 25,000 members. And one interesting thing that I read was that he said that when he started there, he began preaching, and he told them, said, "I'm going to start out with Genesis 1, and then we're just going to have a, we're going to read the Bible through." Well, he said one or two or three of the deacons said that, "Oh, I wish you wouldn't do that, Brother Criswell," said, "it'll kill the church." But they had then 3,000 members. Of course, that was a big church by my standards. but by the time he'd read the Bible through, they had 20,000 members. So maybe the old-time preaching still works.
My dad was lashing to preach when I was about a year old. And back in his day, a preacher was supposed to preach for an hour and drink a big pitcher of water at that time.
Yeah. In summer, it wasn't hard to do, was it? But I've been to Locust Grove for a few sermons, and I've seen them get awful hot over there in July, August.
It used to be quite warm in the churches. And while I was in Tennessee, I preached in a lot of churches that didn't have screens on the windows, and we had a lot of trouble with bugs at night.
Did one ever fly in your mouth?
One time at Quito, Tennessee, I was preaching in a revival, and they had a lot of lights around the rostrum, and a hard shell bug went down my throat, and it's 3 or 4 days before I got rid of it. I got some scratching trying to get back up.
Well, that's a funny story. A lot of preachers often tell funny stories. Do you have a stock of those that you might call on, maybe one or two, to illustrate some funny things that happened?
Well, one time I was a pastor in Tennessee. I went to a small church while I was in school. And after the service one day, a lady came by and shook hands with me and said, "We're just so proud to have you. We appreciate you so much." And we used to get the preacher boys out of school, and they'd come out here and preach 3 or 4 months, and they'd get to where they could preach pretty good, and then some other church would call them, and we knew if we called you, we'd get to keep you for a long time.
Well, that is a funny story, and since the humor's on you, it makes it all the better, I suppose. I'm sure you could tell many, many stories. Do you remember the first time you saw Marshall County?
I suppose it would have been about 43. While we were living in Jackson, Tennessee, I would come through this way, going up to McLean County, where my parents lived.
So you drove through then. Were you much impressed at the time?
I just saw the country and had no idea that I'd ever be living here, and didn't see anything that attracted me.
No. Yeah, well, for an outsider, I'm sure there wasn't a whole lot in those days that would be attractive to people. When you began preaching, where after a while they have revivals, big meetings they call them, and so on. Where did you stay? Did you stay in the homes of the people, or?
Sometimes I'd stay in a different home every night.
Now that's pretty hard, isn't it? Trying to move every day.
It's quite a chore. And then by the time you go somewhere for the noon meal, another place for the evening meal and go to church and then move into a new place and get settled in for the night, he pretty well put in a whole day.
Oh, that's right. No wonder you had a heart attack. There would be so many things. One of the, would you say, are the biggest problems that faced you as a preacher, some of them?
Shuffling the bills to be able to have the necessities.
The support was pretty lean and back then. I guess it was for just about everybody in the middle of the Depression, maybe worse for preachers, though, than anybody else.
When I left Detroit, my wife and I both were working. Our take-home pay was $110 a week. And when we moved to Jackson, Tennessee, we had two boys in grammar school, and we both enrolled in Union University. And I got two quarter-time churches and a half-time church that paid me $80 a month.
Oh, my. Your standard of living simply had to drop, didn't it?
There was quite a change in the way we live.
Did you, how in the world did you make it? Did you have a garden, perhaps? Or?
We had some churches where the people divided their produce with us. And around Thanksgiving, I had one church that I couldn't take my family with me on the Sunday before Thanksgiving because I knew they were going to fill my car up with country hams and canned fruit and potatoes and turnips and everything that they raise on the farm. And sometimes I'd have to move things around to find a place to get in a car to drive home after service.
Well, that's pretty good eating, a lot of that. You say you went to Detroit and you worked for Chrysler for a long time. How were the roads to get to Detroit back then, and how did you travel? Did you drive a car up?
Yes. They were all narrow, two-lane roads. There was room to pass, but you had to stay on your side. Mm-hmm. And if you drove from where we lived in Butler County to Detroit, and anything less than 22 hours, you were driving faster than it would be safe to drive on the kind of roads that we had.
Back then, I've heard some people say that not all the states had stock laws, and you might run up on flocks of geese and cows. And did you ever have any experience like that?
Just a few times I've seen some cattle on the highway, and Black Angus were the most dangerous ones to be on the highway at night because you couldn't see them soon enough.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Those scoundrels make good hamburgers, but they're not visible very far.
That's right.
Did you ever take a train back then?
Before I married, I made a few trips to Detroit. Found out I wasn't old enough to get a job. It was difficult to get a job in Detroit before you started shaving. And I was up there before I had to start shaving. And they just looked at me and motioned me on by.
That is one of the things, apparently, that the personnel men look for.
Mm-hmm. He wanted to know whether you were grown up or not.
Mm-hmm.
So we could go to Beaver Dam in Ohio County and catch a train to Louisville, and then get a train out of Louisville to Detroit. Back then, it cost about $12.
About $12 to ride from Louisville to Detroit, or maybe Beaver Dam to
from
Detroit.
From Beaver Dam to Detroit.
That's a long way for not very much money, isn't it? But I expect that $12 was not so easily earned. You said you worked for $5 a week there at one time.
Yeah, when I married. And I worked as a carpenter when I was in my teens, 8 hours a day and sometimes more for $1.25 a day. And everything then was with the old hand tools. We didn't know anything about power tools, and all the lumber was hardwood.
The hand saw was just muscle saw.
Yeah. Yeah.
And everything else, you didn't have electric screwdrivers and power saws.
We didn't know anything about a Yankee screwdriver then. We had to turn them by hand.
Well, did I ask you about your children?
No, we have two sons.
Well, tell us their names and where they live.
Donald is the older one, lives at Future City down in McCracken County. And
yeah, that's out toward Heath, isn't
yes.
it? Out toward the atomic plant.
And both of the boys graduated from Heath High School before they went into service. And they're both married, and Gerald lives on this side of Paducah in the Farley community. And we have four grandchildren and three great-grandchildren.
Well, that is makes a wonderful family, and they're near enough that you can enjoy them.
Within an hour, we can go see either one of them.
Tell us a little bit about when you first married, the kind of a house you lived in. Did you have running water and electricity?
The only running water we had is when you go to the well and run back with a bucket. And the well was 65 feet deep where we lived for a couple of years, and almost every time you go to the well bucket to get the water bucket to get a drink, why the bucket would be empty. So that meant go to the well too if you wanted to drink.
One of the students asked me last week at Murray why it was that it rained every weekend. Well, I really didn't know the answer, but it does seem it's been doing that. And I guess your question was, why is the bucket always dry when I go to it?
Yeah, that's right. And for a couple of years, we lived in the same house where I grew up when I was, well, up until I was about 15 years old. And then we moved to Butler County. My dad was pastor in Butler County at two or three different churches. We lived at Rochester. And then while we were living there when I was a kid, it was always necessary to go draw a bucket of water out of that deep well when it was almost ice cold, about the time I had to wash my feet before going to bed. I never could understand why somebody couldn't leave a little water in the bucket to get a little bit warm before I washed my feet.
Did you ever try to draw a bucket of water when it had rained and there was freezing rain and the rope was about like a hickory stick?
Many times. And then my dad decided that ropes wore out too fast, so he got a well chain.
They were nice and cool to your hand.
And when they got covered with ice, when it would rain and freeze, that was quite a chore, and it didn't make any difference if you had gloves on. That cold chain would get your fingers cold through it.
I remember those days well, and you took a bath in a number three wash tub, probably.
Mm-hmm. Every 2 weeks, whether you needed it or not, the tub would be brought in front of the fireplace, and the warm water poured in.
Did you ever heat it in the sun in the summertime?
Later on, we got one of those tubs that looked like two wash tubs put together, and we sat that out in the yard and got it warm for summertime.
But you know, that water would get rather hot in a July day by set it out about 9 in the morning and take a bath at 1 in the afternoon or so.
So were we. Heat was used a long time ago.
That's right. We had took advantage of solar. We didn't call it that exactly. Didn't think about it in the way we do now. Well, let me ask you about medical care. Did your family have any special ways that they tried to keep you from getting sick, maybe?
We used all kinds of remedies. I wore an acidity bag around my neck when I went to school. And all the other kids had one around their neck, and when we got around the pot-bellied stove on a cold day and that acidity started getting hot, why, you could tell there was a gathering.
That stuff had a distinctive smell to it, didn't it?
Yeah, and we always had to take sulfur and cream of tartar mixed in syrup in the spring to get our blood purified, and drink sassafras tea. They thought that was good for you. And then we had over-the-counter medicines that most everybody had to take quinine and pills like that. It didn't make much difference what you had wrong with, you had to take quinine.
Yeah. Of course, back then, I suppose, with unsupervised water supplies and the number of mosquitoes that there were, and yeah, a lot of people had malaria, I guess. And
I had malaria chills.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I had to take a lot of quinine for that. I was allergic to mosquito bites.
Did you ever try Grove's Tasteless Chill Tonic?
I guess I've taken 5 gallons of it.
Mr. Dr. Groves over at Pass, Tennessee, invented that and made a fortune out of it, I guess, and even built a high school called Grove High School, or at least they named the high school after him. I think he made a donation on it.
My mother's mother lived to be 81, and I remember a lot of years that she stayed with us. She took Mompou's tonic, and she thought that was the reason that she lived to be that long.
Mm-hmm. I don't believe I'm familiar with that, but that's a good one. You remember how to spell it?
I just remember, I was real small, and I just remember hearing him say it.
W-A-M-P-O-U-S,
I think, Mompou's.
Uh-huh.
I was about 5 years old. We had a lady to come visit with us a few days. And back then, they believed in rubbing on a lot of ointments.
Did you ever hear of mustard and goose grease?
Mm-hmm. That was a remedy.
My mother used to put that on my chest. She said it'd keep me from having pneumonia.
Mm-hmm.
And if I were coughing with a chest cold, that was to clear it up.
And sometimes they'd add a little turpentine to that on a flannel rag and put that over your chest.
You'd feel that, too. It produced some heat, didn't it?
This old lady that was staying there was getting greased up for night. She may have been rubbing Vicks in her nose and different things. And I said, grease, Jimmy, grease, continually grease.
Well, do you remember anything about funeral customs or sitting up with the sick, or did they sit up with corpses back then?
Nobody was kept in the funeral home. They were always prepared and taken back to their home, and the neighbors would come in and take turns, and they sat with the corpse all night. Of course, even up until 25 years ago, it was still a custom in a lot of communities not to leave the bodies in the funeral home.
Mm-hmm. And they would never allow that family to be there by themselves. All the neighbors would be around. And and I think, did the men dig the graves?
The men in the neighborhood dug the graves. And a lot of times, back in the 20s and 30s, a carpenter in the community would make the caskets. The undertaker ordered the lining and the padding and the handles for the caskets, and for $15 you could buy the padding and the lining and the handles, and the carpenter would make a casket.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that didn't have money to pay for an undertaker were buried by the people in the community.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mr. Wigginton, it's been a pleasure talking to you. I've enjoyed your stories and of your life, your wife, your children, and how you grew up. And you came to Marshall County. How do you like retirement here?
It's wonderful. We have a lot of friends here. If we feel well, we get out and associate with the other people, and if we don't, we just stay in seclusion.
How was it last winter? These flowers bloom out here in this lobby all the
time? We have flowers blooming in March. The winter before last, when it was real cold, it was 21 below zero on the outside, and it was 50 degrees in the atrium.
Mm-hmm.
And in March, it was still around 20 degrees outside, and we had flowers in full bloom in the atrium.
That's a real testimony for Lakeland Wesley Village. And let me thank you. And do you have any last word you'd like to say? Our 30 minutes is about gone.
Well, I've just enjoyed talking with you. And hope we'll be seeing you around here quite often.
Thank you very much. I'm Ray Mofield. This concludes our broadcast for today, which we've been doing for the Marshall County Library, the Polk Library at Murray State, and the archives in Frankfort, Kentucky. We return you now to your announcer.